Hey friend, are you swamped with scheduling, bogged down by bookings, or overwhelmed with managing your social media? This message is for you. I would love to introduce you to my secret weapon, StyleSmart VA. This is a company of virtual assistants literally designed by hairstylists for hairstylists. I found them through an interview right here on the podcast, and then shortly after found myself booking a discovery call because I was drowning in administrative tasks and needed help. It's been a few months now, and I can't tell you how much my VA has changed my life. No joke, friends. I am such a believer in StyleSmart VA that I decided to bring them in as an episode sponsor here on the show. Listen, as creatives, our focus should be on the clients and our craft. And now that I have my virtual assistant, I can devote more of my time to exactly that. The beauty of hiring a VA through StyleSmart is that they come to you already trained and able to seamlessly step into your business. From managing appointments and client communications to handling your social media presence, StyleSmart virtual assistants free you up to concentrate on your clients. And that's a change your clients will notice and appreciate. I mean, can we say elevating your perceived value? So when you're ready to level up in your business and take some weight off your shoulders, head on over to stylesmartva.com and book a free discovery call today. You'll also find the link in the show notes of this podcast episode. StyleSmart VA, empowering beauty professionals to focus on what they do best. Welcome back, friend, for another episode of the Your Hair Mentor podcast, where I am your host and your hair mentor, Crystal Green. And man, my head is still spinning, honestly, from last week's adventures at Premier Orlando. For those of you that I met in person, hi! Some of you, it was in real life for the first time and we knew each other online. And some of you, I just met for the first time. Honestly, 10 out of 10 trip. It was amazing. Such a great experience to absorb all of the amazing education that was being put out and just meet and greet all these lovely people in our industry. So if you haven't been to Premier Orlando, I highly recommend going next year. This is like shameless plug for them. They did a great job. I'm like not getting paid to say that at all. But I can talk about it all day, but we want to talk about this week's podcast episode with my friend Nina Tulio, who is also an amazing resource and person and someone you need to check out. And you're going to find out why listening to her on the show today. Nina is so smart and has been in the industry for long enough to have gone through multiple iterations of herself and what people are looking for, and is focusing on the stuff that some of us think is like not sexy, which is like the money part of it. But she has a very unique take on it that I think you're really going to love. So why don't I just go ahead and introduce you to my new friend, Nina Tulio. So Nina, I am so excited to bring you on the Your Hair Mentor podcast today. Thank you so much for coming. I know we both have really busy schedules, so I'm excited to get to know you a little bit and understand the woman behind the brand. And of course, would love to hear about what you're doing in terms of like your business and pricing and all that stuff. But to get us started, because I don't even know anything about you, can you give us like a brief introduction of who you are and where you're located?
Thank you so much for having me. I love doing these podcasts too, because I feel like we do get to, you know, learn so much about each other. So I have been in this business for, this is my 27th year. And listen, time flies by. So make sure you enjoy, I'm talking to everyone listening, make sure you enjoy every moment you have. And, you know, in the 27 years, I've done a lot of things. I've been very fortunate to have two amazing mentors that, you know, one has since passed, but Robin has been my mentor now for over 25 years. And I started out as a hairstylist. I went to vocational school, but I was a hairstylist. And then I was a manager. And then I was a district manager for a chain of salons. And I had 8 salons and about 55 reports. And with those mentors, they ended up selling those salons and we ended up moving to West Palm Beach, Florida. And we opened up 5 salons in 1 year.
Whoa.
It was insane. And that was in Florida. And so after being with them for about 8 years, I decided that it was just, it was time for me to fly solo and do something on my own. So I moved back to Cold, Pennsylvania, and opened up my own salon, a commission salon, and I owned that for 11 years. I sold it back in 2016 because I wanted to do what I'm doing now, but also because I was freaking tired. It was really, really, it was one of the most rewarding and amazing things I've ever done in my life, but I was just exhausted. So 2016, sold that, started doing what I'm doing now, which is my own consulting business and helping salon owners and hairstylists make more money, keep more money, and build their confidence. And so it's been a ride. I also work with Oligo Professional. I've been their business education ambassador now for over, I'm moving into my 4th year. So yeah, now here we are, present time.
Yeah, and then where are you located now?
In Santa Monica, Los Angeles.
Okay. What brought you there from Pennsylvania? Is that what you said?
Yes, from Pennsylvania. So outside of Philadelphia, about an hour or so. We moved to Santa Monica. Well, we didn't move to Santa Monica. My husband got a job in Santa Monica. So we moved to Los Angeles. Primarily, this is all considered the West Side. We moved here for his job. And it was kind of like there was a job in New York City and there was a job in Santa Monica. I'm like, I literally had Santa Monica on because we create goals every year, and it was on my vision board to live in Los Angeles, live in near the beach. And Santa Monica was on, and I said, Santa Monica's on the list. We have to move to Santa Monica. Like, we'll get one opportunity typically to do this, with your job. So yeah, we moved here. We've been here over 5 years now.
Okay. And do you like it? Do you love it?
Love. I do. Listen, I love being near the water. I'm a Pisces, so I live for, being near the beach, hence my background here. And I love the seasons. I love the culture. I love, there's just so much happening here. However, though, there is a downside to that because you're in such a large city and you're in an area where there is so much going on. Because I am a very empathic person, the stimulation and the there's a lot of struggle here. There's a lot of struggling people here. And that really, really gets to me. So, it's been an adjustment with that. But yeah, I mean, we have access to everything, and it's a cool spot, and we're close to the beach. I can't complain.
Where do you go to like decompress from all of that? I'm assuming there's some little safe haven that you're able to go to.
Well, there we can walk to the beach. So we can, it's about 7 blocks. And I love to walk on the strand, but also just kind of sit by the ocean and sit by the water and just put my feet in the sand and just be very grounded in that. I think that's super, super important to do. Or if it's going to a park and just kind of sitting and putting my feet in the ground. I think those are some things that I really like to do. But anytime I'm around the water or going for a bike ride on the strand is also very relaxing too. Those are the things that I kind of like to do to wind down.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about grounding. It's funny, I was just having a conversation with my small kids yesterday who are 6 and 9 years old. They were asking, like, Mom, what does it mean to be grounded? Now they're talking about their friends getting in trouble grounded, right?
Oh,
And so I was like,
yes.
well, depends on the context, right? Like, it could mean that you are in trouble or it could mean that you're connecting with the earth.
Yes.
And they're like,
Which one
what?
do you choose? Yeah.
Yeah, so we had a whole conversation about that last night. I think it's funny that that came
Love
up again
that.
today. I totally believe in that. I swear that is like a battery recharge for me. Just go stick my feet in a stream somewhere and like connect with nature. Love
Yes.
that. Okay, so I want to hear about this consulting business that you run. Just like surface level, I know that you specialize in pricing and like budgeting. I don't know if that's more what you're doing. Can you tell us kind of where you specialize in that regard?
Sure. So I started this consulting business actually back in 2014 when I still owned my salon, but I just didn't have the time to really do anything with it. And it really truly started out for the commissioned salon owner because there's not a lot of support at that time. There wasn't a lot of support. And so I really wanted to lean into helping salon owners. And then over the last 7 years, it's just evolved because our industry has evolved. So now there is, a focus with the independent artist, which is, having courses and support and resources for the independent artist. And of course, still continuing to support the commission salon owner, whether it be through, a class or a course or a free resource or in salon education. But mainly my focus is with the owners. It's a lot of leadership, it's a lot of systems, it is finance and their culture. So that's kind of the lane I live in with the owners, and then with my independent artists, and also with my commission salon owners, which is what you probably see a lot of, which is the pricing, price per minute, price per hour, making sure you're making the right amount of money and the money that you deserve because your services are priced properly. And on the back end, it's making more profit. So increasing profitability in all ways, and just helping people grow, through pricing, through budgeting, and through making sure that they have some systems in place that are going to set them up to win when it comes to their boundaries too. I think that's also very important.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest like stumbling blocks or hurdles that you work with when you start working with salon owners or stylists, as like a first step kind of thing?
The biggest thing that I think we all, and I say all because I have too, is we are so emotional about the way that we run our businesses that we forget that we're actually running a business. And this is coming from someone who I was the discount queen in my salon as a salon owner. The first 5 years for me were a shit show. And so I think if we're going to get to the root of it, which is what I like to talk about and speak from, because I can teach anyone how to price their services, but if they don't feel good about themselves and they don't believe in themselves, and they don't believe in their time and talent and their value, it's not going to hit. So we have to start looking a little bit deeper into these situations. And I think it stems from, our value, it stems from our worth, and, it stems from really looking within and start believing in what you have to offer. How powerful we are as hairstylists to be able to change the way that people feel about themselves in an hour or two. And I think we need to lean into that more. And that's what I say is the biggest stumbling block. From there, it is then, well, I don't want to have price increases, or I don't want to get into pricing because then I'm going to lose my clients, or, I don't want to set up boundaries or have policies because I'm going to lose my clients. That's where all the fear kicks in. But it all starts within us, and it does start with the confidence that we have and the belief that we have in self.
Yeah. Do you think that in the next maybe like 5 to 10 years, that we're gonna see less hairstylists coming into the industry with these same limiting beliefs and fears that those of us, that are now like seasoned stylists have, because there's so much information out there now. And also, tell me your thoughts on this, but I feel like hairstyling is having a moment. Like it's kind of this like elevated thing right now. It's not just like, oh, cute, you're a hairstylist, right?
I think, well, absolutely. I think that I can equate it to this. Most stylists and owners, they do not have a hard time charging their new clients. They have a really hard time increasing for their current clients. So it's the same thing. When we have new stylists coming out of school, they don't have the history and being so emotionally tied. They just know what they see. They're operating from the lane that they know, which is social media, quick access, quick reward, show up, ask for what I want, be myself, put the work in, and I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to charge what I want because this is what they're seeing. And so it's that same mentality. Yes, they're going to come out, they're going to be, they're just not going to give a shit. They're like, this is what I know. This is what I should be charging. This is what I've learned, and I'm going to roll with it. And sometimes the veteran stylist, and I've had this conversation before, they feel a little bit left behind or stuck because they have so much that they have dealt with and endured in terms of the emotional side of it that they are sometimes a little nervous to catch up with the newer stylist in terms of social media, in terms of the mindset, in terms of price increases, in terms of just the way that they're running their business. So I think that we all can help each other. I think the new stylist can help the veterans, and the veterans can help the new. And if we work together as a collective, the veterans may start to get out of their own way a little bit and say, shit, if these new stylists, they don't have the fear to charge, then I can do it too. And then, the veterans saying, slow up, let's take things step by step. Let's dive a little bit more into education. Let's get our techniques on point. I think there is something to say that we could really, really help each other. So I think over the years, I think the students are still going to continue to come out swinging, but I'm hoping that the veterans will also see opportunity and a learning experience in that, and they can, get on board.
Do you find that most of the people that you serve are more of the veteran stylists, like the ones that are kind of grasping for help, or is it more of the younger stylists?
Well, because I typically work with people who, and I work with owners that are just getting started, but I do work with owners typically who are either looking to really elevate or they're really struggling. I don't want to really put an age on it, but I feel like, and then I work with independent artists a lot. And so a lot of them are not new. They've been doing this for some time. Even if they've been doing it for 3 years, 4 years, they still have a little bit of, grass under their feet, if you will. So I wouldn't say that I necessarily work with the brand new stylist, but my message is for the brand new stylist. My message is to prepare them for owning. It is to prepare them for being an independent artist. So maybe it's something that they wouldn't put into practice right now, but if they're looking to do their own thing, or they're just looking to know more about the business as a commission artist, they can absolutely, learn from what I'm sharing.
As you're talking, it made me think of something that I've gone through myself as a seasoned stylist that now has stepped into this new field of podcasting and online education and all this stuff. As a hairstylist, I'm very confident in my abilities. I'm very confident in my pricing. I show up as a professional. I have no doubt in my mind what I'm worth, right? It took me a while to get there, but I'm there. And then when I step into this new role, it's almost like I'm starting all over. I thought the confidence would carry over, right? But it's like I'm a greenhorn all over again, and those same kind of limiting beliefs that I had as a new baby stylist have like bubbled up in this new position, right? And so I guess it just makes me realize that if you don't do the work to understand and like banish those limiting beliefs and those hurdles that kept you kind of down for so long, they're going to find a way to pop back up again, right?
Oh, absolutely. And think of it this way. And I went through that also. I'm glad that you brought that up. I went through that too with moving from being a very seasoned salon owner and stylist, working behind the chair for almost 20 years. When I went into this new role of being an educator, I was like, holy shit, I'm really starting over. No one knows anything about me. And all of the things, and you mentioned, that they'll come up as a stylist, they'll come up and grab you from the time that you were just starting as a stylist, but they're actually so much more deep rooted. These are things that we have kept inside of us from when we were growing up as kids. That's the stuff that really then starts to pop up, right? If we don't work through it and we don't start to heal some of those things. So the voice will continue to get louder. And every time you try to do something new, it's like when you start a new job. If like my husband's in digital media, he knows what he's doing, but when you're starting a brand new job, you feel out of like a fish out of water. You feel like, what's going on here? So I think we need to embrace that feeling, and know that, like, hey, I know what I'm doing here. I've been in the game for a long time. I have educated myself. And yes, am I in a new arena? Yes, but everything that I have learned has prepared me for this moment. Am I going to feel like a little out of sorts sometimes because it is new? Yes, but that's what change brings. And we don't grow unless we step into the change arena. We stay still and stuck when we just continue to do the same things over and over. So I think that feeling is so scary, but it also can be very motivating too, and very inspiring to, or like just feeling like, wow, I can do different things, and I can move around in this industry where opportunities are endless, and I can make it happen.
I heard somewhere recently that fear is like an indicator that we care, right? And when you learn to recognize those feelings of fear, it should be a recognition of like, oh, I really care about this. This means I need to lean into it a little bit more instead of like retreating and backing away going, oh, this doesn't feel good, right? Once I heard that, I was like, ooh, okay. Because I mean, think about it this way. If you didn't have any fear, like let's say you're going to go stand on a stage and talk in front of a group of people. If you had zero excitement in your body, you probably don't care very much. Right. And it's probably going to come across to the crowd that you're talking to. And so you can apply that into every different aspect of your life, right?
Love that. Yes. And fear is excitement. You know, we have to, is it because fear can fool us and make us feel like it's dangerous. But most of the time, what we're doing isn't dangerous. It's not going to hurt us. If we can shift that over to excitement, And for me, this past year and moving into this year, it's been gratitude. I have a lot of anxiety. So for me, I have to really sit and be grounded and move my energy of anxiousness into feeling excitement and then feeling gratitude. Like, wow, I get to do some cool things and I get to meet some amazing people, even though I really don't want to get on that plane because my anxiety is on 10. I continue to think of how grateful I am for all of these opportunities and how grateful I am to meet so many freaking cool people. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of shifting that energy, like you mentioned. I mean, that's a great way to really to look at it as we can shift things and our own mind is so powerful and what it can actually do for us and take us through all of the motions in 15 seconds, you know?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, to apply this to an independent hairstylist or just a hairstylist working on their clients, right? You can be fearful trying a new technique or doing something with your client. And you can also feel gratitude for the opportunity to be able to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious where you stand on the pricing model, because everyone has a different idea of how we should price our services, price ourselves as hairstylists. So I would love for you to give us kind of however much information you want to give us, right? Because I know some of that's probably proprietary information that you coach to, but just kind of a little bit of where you stand on that would be great.
So the pricing models, you mean, like the structure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that here's the thing that I think everyone should know about me is that I am never going to tell you what to do in your business. My goal is to give you the foundation, the tools, the resource, and information to allow you to make the best decisions for your business. So you'll never see me out here battling people on Instagram about the pricing structure because there's no point. Now, when I coach and teach to pricing, it is a la carte pricing on the back end, package pricing to the client on the front end, but they also have an hourly rate. You know, everyone should understand what their hourly rate is too. So do I have people that I've worked with that want to go into hourly and they feel that it's going to be better for them? Sure. But I am going to go through maybe some of the pitfalls with them that could come with hourly pricing. And when I'm working with people with package pricing, if I feel like they're going to be someone that's a discounter, they don't throw in glosses, they're not including for glosses or treatments, or they don't know how to have those conversations, I want to educate them on how to have those conversations. But I also have to understand that maybe package pricing isn't going to be for them if they can't be inclusive in that way. So I think I lean toward coach and teach to a la carte and package pricing, but is there a lane for hourly pricing and can it work for some people? Yes. Do I think it's the best model for everyone? Absolutely not. I find that there are more pitfalls with the hourly pricing because if you are efficient and you work quickly, that could work against you. You can only work so many hours a week, you know, until you cap and you have to continue to raise your prices. And also the other pitfall with hourly pricing is the product cost. So if you're not doing hourly pricing, if you're not doing hourly pricing plus product, you could start to run into a problem where your hourly rate is going to disintegrate quite quickly because you're using so much product and we're not wrapping that in. So, you know, I think that my best advice is to weigh the pros and cons, understand who you are in your business and understand what you're trying to accomplish and what your end goals are, and make the decisions based on fact and not what's trending. Mm-hmm. Because trending things do not work in terms of being or creating sustainability in your business. So if you want to dive into package, do your research, see if it aligns with you and your brand and core values. If you want to do hourly, make sure you do your research and your homework and you just don't jump into it because everybody's talking about doing hourly pricing. So that's where I stand on that. And my goal always is to give people the support and the information they need so they can make the decision. I'm never going to tell anyone like, don't do that. That's not going to work for you unless I feel like it's going to be a problem. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I feel like we're going down a lane here and we're going to go into package pricing and I'm like, you know what, this, it's just not going to work for you. I just want people to feel empowered in their own business. So I'm not going to say, don't do that or do that. But if you want to work with me, we're going to work on a la carte and package pricing, but you will get an hourly rate too.
I think so. The more people that I talk to, on this show, in the world that are doing interesting leadership type things, the more I realize it's not necessarily about the pricing structure, for example. That's not the answer. The answer, time and time again, is looking inward and figuring out, you mentioned a few things. You mentioned goals and you mentioned like brand values. And so it's like this inside work that we have to do before we can make decisions that I think is just really new and exciting. And I know it's like boosted in a topic right now. Like it seems like everyone's talking about mindset and all these cool things, and I love it, but I only recently connected the dots between the two. Like, I thought they were separate. It was like you can be kind of like woo woo and doing this internal work and feel all warm and cozy. And you can also be like this business badass powerhouse, but like, really, they're very connected, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you say that because it's so true. You know, our internal and our external, our business and our personal lives, they run parallel. So, you know, I talk often, stop looking externally for what's happening inside your business. Everything that you need in your business is within your four walls and it's inside you. So stop blaming externally or blaming other people, for what's going on in your business. We have to start taking accountability for what's going on. And that means that we have to take a deeper look at how we're running our businesses and the space that we're leading from. Because if we're leading from fear, our decisions are going to be based on fear and not confidence.
I'm just thinking, like, for example, one of the salons that I worked in years and years ago, we all had kind of discussed as a group that we needed to raise our prices, right? We were like, I think we need to raise our prices. Well, how did we figure out what to raise them to? We just looked at the other salons in town and we're like, oh, well, they're charging that much. That's what we should charge too. And like, that makes no sense when you actually stop and think about it, right? Ugh,
Absolutely. And
because,
it's
like,
still
the,
happening. I think it's
yeah.
changing a ton. But, you know, now here's, I will say this. Should you know what's going on in your with competition around you? 1000% yes. I always had my eye on what was going on around me, like a corner of my eye. But my focus was always within my own business because you could get so distracted that you worry about what's happening so much over there that you forget what's happening inside your business. So I don't think there's anything wrong with doing research. Actually, part of pricing is doing research. But don't base your prices solely off of what somebody else is charging. And don't base your prices solely off of what you want to make. Because that's another thing I see too is like, I want to make $300,000. Oh, okay. Well, there are so many other factors that go into it. Can your market handle for you to charge what the value is of that $300,000? What does that come out to? I'm just going to throw a number out here. $120 an hour. I don't know what the PPM on that is, but if it's $120 an hour, can your market handle $120 an hour? You know, we have to think of things a lot differently. And is what you want to make a factor? Sure, but we can't solely base pricing on what we want to make.
Right. But even that, if you take that down the rabbit hole, is like, okay, so I want to make $300,000 a year. Can my market bear it? Well, really, the question is, who is your target market, right? Who are you serving first and foremost? And then you can go down that list and figure out, can't what is that person going to value? How is that person going to place me in their monthly expenses and kind of extrapolate from there, you know?
Absolutely.
So do you do that kind of work with people that you bring on as like, do you do one-on-one coaching, first of all? Is that what you do?
I do
Okay.
one-on-one coaching. I love doing one-on-one coaching. I'm at the point right now where I'm taking smaller one or two clients maybe a month at this point, because I have a lot of clients that I work with on a regular basis, and also my students, they have priority for me for coaching. So yes, I absolutely do one-on-one coaching. But what we do and what we work on, and a lot of what I do is, I have my own calculators that start off with a budget worksheet, because on the back end, we have to not worry about how much money we're making. We also have to worry about how much money we're keeping. So we start off with a budget sheet. There's all these categories. There's different percentages that are allocated to each category, and it will show you where you're at in terms of your profit margin, how much you have to put aside for taxes every month. And then that budget sheet converts to a price per minute, price per hour worksheet. And then we get that, your baseline price per minute, and then we get a target baseline. I'm sorry, then we get a target price per minute. And we go through each and every single item on their menu, and we compare where they are, where they need to be, and how do we get them there. So primarily, that is the work that I'm doing with salon owners. It's that, but it's also leadership. It's also systems. But most of the people, they want to make more money. They want to keep more money. And a lot of people come to me because they don't know where their money's going. They're like, we're bringing in a shit ton of money, but when I run my profit and loss statement, I have $0, like, or I'm in the negative. Where is this going? So that's a lot of the stuff that we work on in my courses, and also, with one-on-one coaching.
And that's just like life skills in general, too, right?
Yes.
And I know, at least from my personal experience as a creative person, that was never something that came natural to me. In fact, it like, ugh, I hated it. I didn't want to talk about budgeting. I just wanted to make this money and have this like romantic vision of like dollar bills just floating around me, Like it's great. Life is awesome. So I never wanted to pay attention to that stuff. But then at the end of the year, I'd be like, oh yeah, shoot, where'd all my money go?
Absolutely. And I've been there many times. I get it. So I can relate for sure.
Yeah. It was almost like, well, I'm sure when you and I first started, it was different too, because we were cash-based businesses a lot of the
Sure.
times too. And like, not to get myself in trouble with the IRS or anything, but like cash was almost like it didn't happen, right? And so it was like cash would come in and I'd be like, well, I guess I'll go out for a fancy dinner because I don't want to pretend like I made this money today. And oh, it was terrible. But no one ever coached me any differently. There was no discussion about this happening, 20 plus years ago. So I love that this is
Sure.
happening now.
Yeah, it's shifting so much. And I think, when we're talking about, tips, obviously that's revenue for your business. The cash that's coming into your business, that's revenue for your business. Retail, that's revenue for your business. But I want to make sure that everyone understands that your business should be able to run, and you should be able to provide for yourself solely based off of your service prices. So I don't include tips, and I do not include retail in any of our pricing, because your service prices should be what they need to be in order for you to pay your bills, pay yourself, and live your life. Now, if you can't do that, there's an issue with your pricing. If you have to rely on your tips to cover your bills, there's an issue with your pricing. If you have to work over 40 hours a week to pay your bills, there's an issue with pricing. So I just feel like we need to get our prices together so we don't have to rely on retail and tips. Now, is retail important? Yes, it's part of the client experience, but you shouldn't have to rely on it in order for you to, keep your business afloat and make the money that you want to make.
Yeah, it's like the icing on the cake kind of thing, right? Oh, I love that. And then with the leadership piece that you speak to, give us like a little overview of what that looks like in on your terms.
With the leadership piece, I think, and there's a, I took a class last year in May, a Harvard business class all about culture and leadership. And they talked about this framework in terms of how you create the ultimate culture in your business. And leadership was at the forefront of that. And I think what happens in our business a lot is that we are great hairstylists, but we forget that when we are opening up a salon, and we're going to own a business, that you actually have to understand how to lead people. And I work from a very servant space. I'm a servant leader. I'm still that way to now into the business that I'm in from the way that I led my own team. And I think the component is that when it comes to leadership, you have to know what your leadership style is. You have to understand who you are not only as a brand, but also, you know, what your core values are as a person, and those core values translate into the core values of your business. You have to know what you stand for, what your belief system is, and what your mission and vision is for the business. And then when you're leading other people, you have to understand that part of that is coaching those people. It's training those people. You know, sometimes salon owners get mad because their stylists aren't showing up and doing XYZ. Well, did you train them? Did you coach them? Did you lead them? Did you guide them? Do you have clear expectations and standards? You know, so before we get mad at other people, again, we've got to look within. So when it comes to all of that, we have to do it starts with you. You have to define who you are, what you stand for, who you're serving, and understanding that leadership doesn't mean you say yes all the time. Leadership means that you have your culture, core values, and everything and standard pinned down, and every decision that you make comes down to that. And then the servant side of it is not only coaching to your own goals and dreams as an owner, but you have to learn how to coach to your stylist's goals and dreams. So every meeting that you have with them, if Susie is your stylist and Susie wants to buy a new car, then every meeting I have with Susie is going to get her to buy that new car and quickly. And I did this with my own team, you know, in helping them get out of debt or setting up a plan of action for them, or, you know, helping them buy their first home. Not helping them, you know, in that way. I'm saying I'm setting up a pathway for them and a growth plan for them so they can do these things. They did the work. You know, I had the most amazing team and I love them to this day. And so I think what we're missing is that the way you lead has to be consistent, and it has to be in a way where you are put last, you know, like Simon Sinek. I love him. He's a great servant leader. And you know, he speaks, does a lot of TED Talks, but he has a book called Leaders Eat Last. And I think there's a book, Leaders Eat Last. Is that what I think there's a book called that, or maybe I'm confusing one of his TED Talks, but he talks about your team being at the forefront. And I'm a big proponent of leading from the back. I want to lead from the back. I don't need to shine. I don't need to be out there. I want my people to be better than me, stronger than me, more efficient than me in the way that they're doing hair. I want them to shine. I want to lead from the back so I could oversee what's going on and move the ship that way and say, hey, we need to go a little bit to the left, or maybe we could stay a little bit straight. Like, I think that that creative side can take over sometimes, but 80% of being a salon owner is leadership. And if we don't get it right, it could cause a lot of problems and be detrimental, you know, in your business. Now I want to look up that Simon Sinek book because I'm like, what is that? Because anyone who loves leadership or wants to actually want to turn them on to the resource with Simon Sinek, if you love and you're looking for leadership and you're looking for someone who has more of a leadership style that is servant based, he is it. So Start With Why is one of the books that I love. Yes, Leaders Eat Last is the other book. Yep.
This is really fascinating. So, you mentioned the client experience earlier, which I'm like nodding my head like, yes, client experience. That's like the what I coach to also, right? But you just said something that like made something click in my head here. Okay, you're talking about the statistic, right? Of like 80% of leadership is basically putting your stylist first and figuring out what they need and how to serve them. That's like the exact same thing that we do as hairstylists for our clients, right? The client experience is all about figuring out their needs, their wants, their desires, how to serve them, how to move them towards their goals. And it's like you're taking the exact same model and you're just stepping it one step to the side, and now it's not about the client experience. Like that's the end result, right? But now there's a step in between. It's the stylist experience, right? And so if you think about it
Absolutely.
that way, it's like, oh my God. So as an owner, as a leader, you're not just providing a roof over their head and power. No, you're there to figure out like what is going to make that stylist's experience so good that you're irresistible and they're gonna wanna stay with you and they're gonna wanna help you, right? I mean, just my mind right now is like, what just happened?
Yes. Yeah. And you're so right about that. And I think on a deeper level, where this comes from is if you want to create an experience where your clients are happy and they're returning, it all stems from the way the leader treats the team. So the way you treat your team is the way your team is going to treat your clients. And it's very cyclical. And so I think people need to understand when they're getting into a salon, is it about creating an amazing, warm environment that's safe and inclusive? Yes. But that goes beyond the roof. that you're providing for them. It means that how you treat them and how you nurture them and how you give to them and serve them is going to be a direct return on how they treat the clients that are coming in the door. So you can always tell when you go into a salon or when you go into a, doesn't matter, anywhere that there's a team environment, you can always tell the team that has a good, strong leader because the team is happy. They are thriving. They are supporting each other. They are working together as a team. There's good energy. It's positive. And when that, when you walk in and that shit, you could cut that with a knife. I'm sorry to have to say this, but everything that goes on in the business falls on the leader of the business. And I speak from experience going through very hard times in my business. And there were times where I had to hold up that mirror and look at myself and say, what the actual F are you doing? You're screwing up. Get it together because you have a team that's relying on you. So if your team isn't showing up, it's on you. If your team's not making the money they want to make, it's on you. If you have someone that is gossiping and it's not being taken care of, it's on you. Now, don't get me wrong, team members that are listening, you got to show up and show out too. You have to do your part. You have to show up as you promised. This is a partnership, it's a relationship. So I'm not saying that the salon owner needs to do everything and the stylist gets to do whatever they want. No, this is a 50-50 partnership and everybody needs to show up and do their job. But in terms of responsibility, if someone's coming in late and you're not taking care of it, that's on you. And that breeds a lot of resentment in your salon.
And the same could be said for the stylist that has a client showing up late. If they're not making it a serious thing, then it's going to keep happening over and over again because they're not taking the responsibility as the business person that they should be. Oh, I just love this conversation so much.
Yay.
This has been so great. Nina, will you tell me if someone is like, I want to get in this, I want to hear more, where can people find you?
So I live on Instagram. You can find me
Same
there
girl.
at Nina Tullio. You can check out my website, ninatullio.com. I have a ton of free resources for the commission salon owner and the independent artist. And I have profit calculators that are totally free. So you can start diving into that if you wanted to. And if you're looking for more in-depth, just go on my website and start looking, at some of the courses that I have and see if anything clicks. But more so, if you have a question, slide into my DMs. I answer every single one of them and I truly am here to serve. And so if you think of something that pops up, then feel free to slide right onto my DMs.
I love that because I feel like so many people almost get overwhelmed with so much information and they don't even know where to start. So that's great.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on here today and sharing some of your awesome wisdom with us.
Thank you.
I feel like we could just like riff on this all day, but I know we both have other important things to get to, so we'll go ahead and wrap
Yes.
it up here.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We'll be in contact. All right. Well, my friend, that wraps up this week's podcast episode here on the Your Hair Mentor podcast. It has been a pleasure to have you here today, and I hope you enjoyed getting to know Nina Tullio a little bit better. And as I always like to say, have a wonderful hair day, my friend, and I'll see you next time. Okay, bye.